But often, you know, we're first responders out there on different waterways. And we also work closely with the Coast Guard. We have people who work at Coast Guard stations handling the radios and phones. We have people that work at Coast Guard stations cooking. Occasionally, we'll even have people, you know, going out on Coast Guard vessels as augmented crew or cooking. That's a little less common, but it does happen. We do have people that do that, and it's
we even have people that fly.
Yep,
we do regular patrols up the Hudson. There's a flotilla in northern Jersey that they do what they call ice patrols, and they go up the Hudson and they report back. Also, they look for, let's say, trails of boats that are leaking oil or something like that.
Right.
They'll report that. And they're also primarily involved in safety on the water. They'll send a plane out over the Raritan Bay or the, you know, close Atlantic, where somebody's reported having trouble, and they can report from the air.
Yeah.
So
the ice patrols are interesting. I'm not current, but I was rated as a pilot that I flew for a few years, and the ice patrols are really interesting because the Coast Guard is responsible for keeping the waterways open in the wintertime for oil deliveries up the Hudson River and up the Connecticut River here in the Northeast. And the reason that that's important is every barge that makes its way up the Hudson River up towards Albany takes 1,000 tanker trucks off the road.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I actually did not. I always wondered how did those waterways get cleared of ice in the wintertime, or did they just ice over? Because I know there are people who live on islands like in the Hudson, and you know, it's amazing.
They have an icebreaker or one south. We're in Division or District 1 South, and we go all the way to the Canadian border, and they have an icebreaker that's based in a little bit north of New York. And they travel the Hudson up and back.
There's actually four of them. There's two little ones and two larger ones. They alternate, you know, which ones are going to go where. The little ones tend to go into the marinas and things to keep the ice broken if they have to. The bigger ones work mostly to keep the barges moving. And, it's a really interesting operation in the wintertime.
Wow. But, wow, that's a really big task. So Boating Safety Week is coming up as well, right?
Yes, it is.
And that's actually got to be pretty important. We were just talking before the show saying that there's been a large increase, especially under the world situation. There's been a large increase of people wanting to engage in recreational boating. But if you're not educated, that can lead to some bad problems happening. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about boating safety and why it's so important.
Well, the boating recreational boating fatalities have gone down quite a bit since most of the states have required people to take at least a basic safe boating course. That's usually an 8-hour course minimum, and I can remember when I've been doing this for 21 years now, and when I first started, you know, you'd see an awful lot of sort of dumb mistakes being made out on the water. People didn't know what the buoy system was. They didn't know where they could and couldn't go. And just, you know, at least having that basic 8-hour class makes a huge difference in the number of accidents and mishaps that we see out there.
Yeah, and to just add to that, you know, we've been really concentrating on power boats. And over the past 10, 12 years, the paddle craft and the kayaks and canoes, and anybody can go into a store and buy a kayak without any knowledge of being on the water. It's not like buying a powerboat where you at least have to know port and starboard and things like that. But so the fatalities from kayaks and canoes have greatly increased, and that's why we're concentrating now trying to hold those numbers down. I know in the Delaware there's been some fatalities this past year, and basically people not wearing their life jackets and people not aware of what can happen on the water, you know, either by by choice or by accident, you know. So it's a challenging thing that we have to start. And over the years now, I think we're starting to make an impact.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've spoken at paddle clubs, and it's interesting how much these clubs put the focus on safety. So if you belong to one of those clubs, you have to have a life jacket that's on all the time. You have to have appropriate weather-resistant clothing if the water is cool. You have to have a radio with you, a handheld radio. You have to have reflective gear in case you happen to be out past dark. And yet we see these people as Jim just said, that just they'll walk into a sporting goods store, you know, $150 later, they've got a plastic kayak on their roof and they're out, you know, in Raritan Bay somewhere. And we've seen an awful lot of them who have had, you know, serious problems because they weren't trained properly and they didn't have the proper equipment. You know, that life jacket, we can't stress that enough. If you're not wearing it, it's you know, it may not do you any good because stuff happens quickly on the water. And, you know, if you have the life jacket on, you don't have to worry about it. You know, you're going to at least have your head above water and you're probably not going to drown. But if you don't have that life jacket on, bad things can happen.
Yeah, also, Ken and I own larger boats, power boats. I own a big sailboat, and Ken has a large power boat. So when we're going out on Raritan Bay, you can't see a kayak. You know, they're supposed to have flags on and some kind of identification. But it's tough. If you've got rough water and there's somebody out there in a kayak, you know, he's going to be going down, up and down with the waves. And, you know, I know one, my son was with me, and he said, "Dad, over there." And I said, "What?" You know, and yeah, they're very hard to see. A little bit different than the rivers and the lakes. You know, but if somebody's out there on Raritan Bay, which we have clubs that go out on Raritan Bay. I know a few people that go out. And, it's a lot of fun, but, you know, I think the safety conscious is, you have to be more safety conscious out there.
Yeah, yeah. It really is important. That's something that we harp on constantly is get trained and wear a life jacket.
Yeah, I took safety training. It's quite a few years ago now. I should probably update that. But one of the main themes, almost every page of the book, they mention putting on your personal flotation device and having it on or keeping it on, you know, in just about every situation that you're going to, any dangerous situation, you're going to want that on. And, I mean, sometimes people have boats where they kind of hang out on them or they sleep on them or whatever, but so maybe they don't have it on all the time, but it's really important to keep it on as much as possible. And yeah. I was actually thrown from a canoe once, so I know how important that life vest can be. You know, because you're not always even conscious of the fact that you're underwater.
Right, right.
Well, that's one of the first questions the Coast Guard's going to ask you if you call in for help. You know, any kind of help. You know, you're in distress or something like that. They're going to say that, how many people and do you have your life jackets on?
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're going to put your life jackets and everybody on deck.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. You know, and today with the inflatable life jackets that they have, it's like wearing a pair of suspenders. You never even realize that you're wearing them, and they're not that expensive. They've come down in price a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there's really no excuse not to have it, especially when you consider, you know, what the penalty is to your, you know, to your health or your life if you don't have it on.
It's true. I mean, it's amazing. People, especially around here, we have the Delaware River, we have the Raritan River. And you're mentioning kayaks. Yeah, they're a great tool, but they're also they take a fair amount of skill. And if you know, just walked into the box store and purchased one, I mean, it used to be you would go to a sporting goods store and maybe the salesperson knew something about that and said, "Hey, you also need this life vest with it."
And they don't tell you the extra things that you really should get,
right?
And you really need.
Yeah.
And really, what our inspections are really based on government on federal standards, and a little bit on state, but the federal standards we inspect by. So, and there is a booklet out there. You can also go online and get those standards, and we'll be passing out all kinds of verbiage and pamphlets and stuff to make people aware of what they really need and how to behave on the water.
That's true, and good courteous, just like being on the roadways. Sometimes people figure it's water. It's not like going out on the interstate. I don't have to think about the way I do when I drive a car. But obviously there are rules of the road.
Yeah, sure. There's no line. I'm sorry. There's no lines out there. And my instruction, if I've taught a couple courses over here what's your name? And maybe you took one.
Possibly.
I always tell my people that take the course that ambulances don't float.
That's true.
Yeah. It's just so important to know what you're doing out there. It's one of those things where, like you say, in years gone by, you didn't need a driver's license. You didn't need a safety course. You didn't need anything. You just needed to be able to get your engine started and go out on a boat. The whole push towards more boating safety has made a big difference. The fatalities have gone down a lot in the recreational boating sector, except, unfortunately, as Jim mentioned earlier, in the paddlecraft and the other group of people that still have a much too high percentage of accidents and even fatalities are people that hunt from boats, like duck hunters and whatnot. Because if you talk to them, which I've done, and say, well, you should have a life jacket on, all this. Well, I'm not a boater. I'm just out there hunting. Well, you're out there in the water. Yeah.
You're in a boat.
Yeah, yeah. But,
well, even fishing clubs that I've spoken in front of, fishing clubs, it becomes repetitious after a while that you have to constantly inform them of, safety procedures and how to be safe and be aware of your surroundings so that, a storm comes up, especially if you're on a Round Valley or Spruce Run's not so bad, but Round Valley's notorious for putting people on the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, well, there's stories out there. I don't know how true it is that there are a few people that have never been recovered, but... Anyway, it really is important, especially with the cold water that you have a life jacket on. Even in the summertime, you get some of these like the Delaware River, even Round Valley and to some extent Spruce Run, they stay pretty cold all year round. And if you don't have a life jacket on and you go in the water and you can't get out of the water right away, you can wind up suffering hypothermia, which basically paralyzes your muscles, and you're no longer able to keep yourself above water, and you wind up just slipping under and drowning. That's the worst part of it, because you're aware the whole time.
That is really scary. I don't think a lot of people are aware of that fact that you just get really cold and
right, your muscles just can't work anymore after a while.
Wow.
We don't mean to scare everybody, but
right. But having that life vest on would make a big difference.
Yeah.
If you find that situation, if you're thrown from the boat, say you're out on a boat alone, or get knocked out of your kayak, it is a solo activity to begin with. So yeah.
Speaking about being ejected from a boat, there is a new regulation out there this year that if you have a kill switch, which is a lanyard that has a forked end that goes into a switch and then attaches to the operator of the boat. And if if you have one of those on your boat, the new regulation is you must have it attached to the operator, whoever is at the controls. I've seen that rule in years gone by isn't handled as strictly as it needs to be. And there's a lot of videos on YouTube about boats that are out of control. People have fallen out and the boat is just going around in circles or smashing into other boats or whatnot. And that can be really dangerous. If you have a lanyard on your boat, make sure that it's in operating order. Make sure that it's clipped to you when you're operating, or else you could wind up facing a fine.
Wow, and I imagine that's very helpful when you're operating something like one of the smaller watercraft, like a jet ski or something like that.
Right, right. Any jet ski has a kill switch lanyard now. The original ones, the original jet skis were stand-up models, and they didn't have a kill switch. What they had was a feature where if you fell off, it would immediately go into an idle and then just go in circles.
Right.
And the idea was, well, it'll come back to you and you can climb on board. The problem was that there were a number of people who got sort of, you know, whacked in the head as the thing came around. And
they stopped that.
Yeah, so they've gone to the kill switch idea, which is a lot safer for everybody. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And jet skis are a whole nother world. They are considered vessels. You must have a safety certificate to operate one of those in New Jersey waters. And the one of the biggest mistakes people make with those is they forget that if you don't have your power on, it will not steer. It doesn't have a rudder. It has a movable jet nozzle, which does not act as a rudder. And so also there's an awful lot of videos on YouTube of that too, where people crashing into things because they were going very fast, let off on the power, and then tried to turn. So you really need to, again, it boils down to instruction. You really need to be, you know, if you're going to operate a vessel, make sure that you know how to operate it. Get some instruction.
And we do inspect those too. So if anybody's coming, you can bring that kind of a boat also. Any kind of a vessel, really.
Oh, okay. So if somebody wants to bring their kayak.
Jet ski, power boat, anything that'll fit on a trailer.
Now,
we have them up to 25 foot.
Yeah. You know, if they do bring a paddle craft, a kayak or a canoe or something like that, they have to have all the safety equipment that's needed, which isn't much, but you have to have a life jacket. You have to have a sound producing device, and you have to have it with you when you come for the inspection or we can't pass it.
Right.
And part of that is too, so we can inspect those safety items. We don't just look at the boat. We look at the life jackets. Are they falling apart? Or is the stitching come apart? Is it serviceable? That sort of thing. So we really do a pretty thorough inspection of the entire vessel.
Right. So people actually know whether they've got the right gear, if it's going to be useful in that moment.
Exactly. You put a little kid or a small person in an extra large adult life jacket, and it could also be deadly because the people slip down inside once they're in the water, and now their hands are up, their head is underwater, but the life jacket is bobbing up there, and we've seen some serious accidents happen just because of that.
Right.
One of the other things that we try to talk about is exhaust from boats, not just from the main engines, but if you have a generator on your boat, quite often those exhausts are out the stern, out the back, and if there's a swim platform there, that could form a real deadly pocket of carbon monoxide.
Wow.
And we've had over the years we've had a number of people who suffered carbon monoxide poisoning because they hang out there. There's a ladder there, and they hang out there for a little while, and you don't realize it that you're being, poisoned by the carbon monoxide.
You've heard of the station wagon effect.
Okay.
Why does your back window on the station wagon gets filthy dirty before the rest of the car does? And that's why. I mean, you've got all that dirt and everything just circling around behind your car. Well, the same thing happens to a boat, only with the boat, it's carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide.
Right.
And makes it much more deadly.
Also, something to keep in mind around marinas, there's hopefully a big push. I think most marinas have lots of signs, no swimming off the docks, mm-hmm. because they have a problem with what they call stray electrical currents. And you might get, you might have a boat that's plugged in and it's operating an air conditioning unit, a refrigerator on board of it, to a larger boat. And meanwhile, maybe there's a fault in the electrical system and you're actually getting current going down through the metal parts into the water, and then somebody jumps in the water and it's like being hit with a taser. They become paralyzed and they can drown. And then, even getting them out of the water, we've had multiple victim scenarios where someone says, oh my gosh, what's the matter with that person? And they jump in to save them and then they become a victim too. So it's something to be aware of. You should not be swimming, near a marina.
Right. Very important. Also, what about alcohol usage in boating?
That's more of a law enforcement issue. We don't do law enforcement. That's one of the things that we're not authorized for in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. However, we do teach about the effects of alcohol, and obviously you're not going to be at your best even with small amounts of alcohol in your system. And you know, there are some severe penalties. It's basically the same same limits, yeah, as drunk driving.
Yes,
and it does affect your driver's license. If you get, you know, if you're caught on the water boating while intoxicated, you could lose your driver's license as well,
and your pilot's license.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a pilot, you know, you can lose them all. You know, one of the big things, because, you know, you go out on the boat, especially if you're cruising out there, and what's the thing? Oh, I'll have another beer, you know, and it happens, and you never know what's going to happen as a result of it.
And you're probably already somewhat fatigued because the effects of the sun, the constant noise, the vibration, all that also helps to affect people's performance. Kind of wears them out, and so on top of that, a little bit of alcohol, it really is amplified by the other effects of being out on a boat. So it's something that you should, you know, if you're the operator, you should wait until you're done for the day.
Yeah, wait.
That's really the smartest thing to do.
That's great. Yeah,
we have a poster.
Oh, contest, poster contest.
That, before, I'm not sure how much time we have left.
Sure, you can keep going. We're good.
Well, I what we're going to do, or what we've got planned for the 29th is a Safe Boating Week poster. I don't know where Joanne had given you
one. I've got some. They look good. Yeah.
And for kids, young to 18 years old, and to create something on Safe Boating Week and safe boating, and we're going to hang them up around our parking lot there, and then somebody will be judging them, and we'll give a prize out. So it's one of the things we have to maybe entice people to come and bring their boats
And bring a poster from their kid.
Bring a poster from their kids, too.
Yeah, that would be great.
I just wanted to get that in there before.
Absolutely.
Actually, that wasn't my idea. That was Joanne's idea.
No, we can let people know that if they want to participate in this. Well, if people are looking for more information, all of this, if they, like, I heard something about that vessel safety check, but when is that going on? Is there a place that people can go and look, a place on the internet maybe? Or
yes, if they go to cgaux.org. There is a site there where they can click on to request a vessel safety check, and our membership will do whatever they can to try to accommodate that person.
And also, along with that, there's a lot of information about requirements. Okay, if they go on the State Police, New Jersey State Police website, the Marine Division. It's got to be the Marine Division.
Right.
There are requirements for the state of New Jersey, which basically follows the federal requirements. I don't think there's anything that's different, but it's under the state police. So basically, there's the same requirements about what's required if you're on the water on a boat. So,
yeah, and in New Jersey, the safe boating certificate, which is required to operate a boat, which shows that you passed a course, is handled by the state police. It's not handled by motor vehicles, so they
state police.
They have their own Marine Division, and everything goes through there, and they have a really good website.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great that they have that, so people can get this information. They don't have to be worried that they can't get access to that. They can find it.
Oh, no, it's readily available on the website and on the internet. And basically, all you have to do is Google federal requirements for boats, and it'll pop up with probably more information than everyone wanted to know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And if people are interested in safe boating classes, are there ways people can get into a class, or are there going to be classes coming up? Or
right now, and it's changing as we sit here, that the about boating safety, which is the standard course, which is put out by an organization called NASBLA, N-A-S-B-L-A, which is the National Safe Boating Association. And this, our state police and subscribe and follow those suggestions. But up to now, we have not been able to teach. The auxiliary has not been able to. There's some commercial people out there that do teach, and they've got permission, but they, due to COVID, for safety of our own members, actually.
Yeah, we're on stand down, okay, basically, for teaching right now.
So we're on now. It is opening up. We just got the word last week that we can do a course, so I probably will try and do a course before the end of June at Raritan, at the Raritan Township. Also going to try and do another one at the Raritan Yacht Club, which is down in Perth Amboy. So that's not cast in stone yet, but we're looking forward. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled, and it'll be advertised somewhere that we'll have a safe boating course.
Well, that'll be great. So if people are interested, they just need to keep checking
back.
Well,
you know, it's been a year, and people have not had the advantage of getting that. And before, well, I guess we were getting maybe 10, 15 people a class, and I would imagine now there'd be maybe more because people do need it. And a lot of people have gotten boats without having, you know, that course because of COVID. So it's going to change soon.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
Can I say a little bit about the Coast Guard Auxiliary?
Oh, please do.
All right. One of the things that that we are always looking to do is to bring in new members. Give you a little background. Jim is a veteran. He's a Navy veteran. Correct?
Yes.
Navy? Yes. I was never in the service. And so 21 years ago, I first heard about the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and it sounded like a great way to learn more about boating and also go out and do some public service. And since then, the training has been incredible. We train as much as we possibly can. When we go out on patrols, we usually will bring at least one trainee with us. In order to be on the boat, you have to have what we call a coxswain, who's in charge of the boat, and then you have to have a certain number of crew members depending on the size of the boat. And so we'll usually have training for the crew members, as well as the if we bring a trainee on board, we'll do practice towing, practice man overboard exercises, practice navigation exercises, and so that, as far as becoming a better boater, I'm pretty sure that's helped me quite a bit. As far as the other things, it's a little bit Walter Mitty-ish, but I've been able to do things that, you know, I wouldn't have ever had the opportunity to before. I've done a bunch of training. I've been at three different Coast Guard training sites for different training programs. I got some of the best management training I've ever had. I mean, even considering, you know, college, taking management courses in college, the Coast Guard leadership course.
You can't beat it.
Yeah, just amazing.
Wow.
And I used to have my own real estate company, and that really came in handy. Yeah, especially the conflict resolution part of that training was pretty amazing. But we get to do other things. As I said, we have people that work at the stations. Some people work augmenting boat crews, I've even personally been deployed. It wasn't what you call a combat zone. It was Barbados for a multinational exercise. We had a bunch of auxiliaries there that were there for support, I think there were about 20 of us that were there for different support duties. And
that.
We have people that do do things like interpret for the Coast Guard, and one of the people that used to be in our flotilla, who's a good friend of mine, he's fluent in Chinese. He's an American citizen, you know, he's an all-American guy, but because of his heritage, he's fluent in Chinese. And he He's actually been deployed a number of times on Coast Guard cutters out in the Pacific. He's been brought down to Washington to act as an interpreter. So there's an awful lot of stuff you can do. We have people that volunteer to do medical services now with COVID. They have some of our people, our doctors and nurses and pharmacists, and they're in a lot of different places. They put them to work with testing and also vaccinating. So there's a lot of things that we can do. We really are a sort of a force multiplier for the Coast Guard, and we'll take up the slack for them so they can do some of the more intensive things like law enforcement and migrant interdiction, drug interdiction, stuff like that. If we can take two or three spots at a Coast Guard station, they have two or three guys that they can now send out to do other things or train them to do other things.
So now on the radio, for example, if you are on Raritan Bay, chances are that the person that answers your call would be an auxiliarist, because we do what they call watch standing.
Yeah,
and we have to train. And just let me add to Ken a little bit that we can train to do just about anything that the Coast Guard can do, with the exception of law enforcement. By Congress, we're not allowed to do. We're not allowed to bear arms. Even if we have a policeman in our midst, he's not allowed to bear arms as long as he's a right. Coast Guard person. So, yeah, we do an awful, awful lot, and augmenting, like Ken says.
Yeah, and if somebody,
I'm sorry,
no. If somebody is interested in public service and interested in this kind of adventure, really, we would really encourage them to look into it. There's again on that website, cgaux.org. There's a spot where you can ask to have somebody contact you because you want to join. It'll tell you where your local flotillas are. Or the basic group is called a flotilla. And we have flotillas pretty much all over the country. Ours is based in Somerville, but we have them all over Middlesex County. They're pretty much anywhere you go, you're going to find at least one flotilla that you can join. We're always looking for new members, people that we can make into better boaters and get out there on the water.
And people that want to give back
sure.
And
not everybody has to be on the water too. That's the other thing.
You don't need a boat
right.
to join the auxiliary. And there's no age requirement and there's no weight requirement.
Right.
Well, you
have to be 17 or older.
Oh, 17, yeah.
But as far as the upper end, we have members in their 80s.
All right.
Yeah.
No, so it can be a lot of fun. I've been to Texas. I've been to Ken's been out to California, down in Barbados. All training stuff. I've taken leadership training down in Texas.
Texas.
And we've done that, and we go up to we have conferences up in Rhode Island once in a while. Well, we had till COVID hit. We were doing that, but a lot of we've changed our tactics quite a bit the past year. We've gone online. We do a lot of Zoom, an awful lot of Zoom now, and where we couldn't do that before. And they realize, and I think it's made us closer because we got more people attending meetings,
yeah.
And they're finding out what we're doing, we're a big family. We are. We take care of one another. So we're always, like Ken said, we're looking for people. We have 15 members in our flotilla. We at one time we had 45 or 50, but over the years we've dwindled down as people get older and people decide it's not for them or whatever. But there's a lot of training involved and an awful lot of training, especially in the beginning. But once you get started, I know Ken is responsible for getting me into the auxiliary. And that was 16 years ago,
Yeah.
And so far we've held office. We hold office in the auxiliary. We don't hold rank. We have officers' ranks that we wear, but our primarily rank is our office. So I've been as high as, and so was Ken, as division commander, where we've had right now in our division there's 94 auxiliaries in what we call division division four in District 1 South, the districts, if you're not familiar with them, are the Coast Guard districts. We follow the geographical area of the Coast Guard. So it to a new person, it can be a little overwhelming, because I always say if somebody wants to come in, you're like a kid in a candy shop. There's so much to do much that you can do, and you don't have to do everything. You know, you just specialize, or if you like being on the water, if you like paddle craft, or if you like public affairs, if you like the internet, there's something for everyone.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great organization to belong to, there are some sort of fringe benefits. First of all, our retirement benefits double every 6 months, I think, right?
Right.
Starts at zero and then ends at zero. we don't get paid.
Right.
However, there are things like our uniforms, the equipment that we buy to be members. That's all tax deductible.
Right.
If you have a boat or an airplane, and you bring it up to standard so that the Coast Guard will accept it. When you're under orders, it's actually considered a Coast Guard vessel. It's considered a United States Coast Guard vessel. And so we're indemnified by the Coast Guard at that point. They cover all our costs when we're under orders. Even to the point of if the boat gets damaged, they'll usually pay for the for the repairs if it's damaged while under orders. Right. So, you know, there's those benefits. But the biggest benefit is sort of the feeling of satisfaction, you know, when you do something like pull somebody out of harm's way and tow somebody into shore, and you have screaming kids on board because the boat's been drifting for a while, or a first aid case where you transport people into shore, stuff like that. It's really really very fulfilling.
Wow.
Yeah, there are two stories. One story, we're out on patrol in Raritan Bay, and we came across... Now, we're not allowed to pull people over. We usually don't. But there's some special cases. But the powerboat's going by. There's a husband and wife, 3-4 kids on board. And the grandmother's holding a baby. And nobody has a life jacket on. So we... pulled them over and
didn't really pull them over, just came alongside.
Yeah, we came alongside and told them
we'd like to talk to you for a minute.
And
accept them of that.
And said, we want you to put your life jacket on. Well, the fellow, like Ken had said before, you know, the size of the life jacket, the guy's up in the bow pulling out all these life jackets, and he wraps the baby in an adult life jacket. And, of course, the thing covers the kid. You can't even see him.
Right.
And we told him that wasn't going to work. You're going to have to find another one. So they did find one that fit them, and they had their life jackets on, and they went on their way. And then there was another boat that came by not long after that, and that family, everybody had their life jackets on. So we went up alongside again and to talk to them, and we gave them all whistles because everybody had their life jackets on.
All right.
It's nice. You know, we do get a lot of sort of teachable moments when we're out dealing with the boating public. And, it's really interesting because, a lot of times people will – They don't want to come over and talk to us, but if we come over and talk to them, then, I do have a question. What about this? What about that? How many people can I have on my boat?
Right,
we'll show them where the capacity plate is, on their boat and kind of talk over, what that capacity means. You know, just because it says, seven people doesn't mean that you can have seven people my size on board. You have to also look at the weight capacity and how much fuel do you have. You know, if you have a 40-gallon cooler full of ice, that's a couple hundred pounds, so you have to add that into the capacity. So it's interesting. We do get some really nice sort of back and forth and teaching moments.
Yeah.
That's great.
Basically, that's what it is. We're, you know, we're charged with boat safety by the, we're empowered, I guess, by the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard's charged with recreational boat safety, and then they can't do it, obviously, so they empower us to go ahead and perform that function for them.
Yeah, the Coast Guard Auxiliary was actually formed just before World War II, and it was originally designed. It was a bunch of civilians. They had to have a boat or access to a boat, and they were doing a lot of patrols, especially offshore, where the U-boats were operating, yes. and they go out and try and save people, try and find the U-boats. In fact, one of the things that I found out was kind of interesting was that the boats back then, they would issue each boat one depth charge that they'd have to manually kind of pick up and drop into the water to, if they did see a U-boat. Anyway, after the war, they decided that they wanted to have a reserve component. So there's the Coast Guard. There's a Coast Guard Reserve, and then there's the Coast Guard Auxiliary now, and we're in that last non-military part of the Coast Guard family.
Really, we're the only military organization attached to any of the armed services. That the Army doesn't have any, or Navy, Air Force doesn't have anything come close to what we do. Or organization that's national. So we have a national commodore. There's a whole hierarchy of people. Like you can go up and work on national, or you can work in your own district division. There's plenty of stuff to do.
I don't want to get anybody mad, Jim, but there is one other organization, the Civil Air Patrol. This is part of the Air Force.
Yeah, we don't want to get.
You're right.
If any of your listeners happen to be a member of the Civil Air Patrol, we work with you guys, so don't get upset.
Wow.
Well, but also what's the other organization? The boating organization.
The Power Squadron. But they're not part of the Coast Guard. The Power Squadron, they're basically about education also. They're volunteers. They do boating education classes. They don't do anything on the water. So, whenever we have like a boat show that we're representing the organization, we'll usually have the Power Squadron one or two booths away, and people will come over and say, well, what's the difference? And the difference is that we actually get to do things, and get to go out on the water.
Yeah.
And not to put them down. They do a great job with boater education. We're a lot more hands-on.
Right. You guys are the ones who are going to be doing the safety inspections, and you're going to be out there if people need some help, a recreational boater needs some help. You might be the guys responding,
Yes,
certainly teaching them. So,
yeah, we try. We try to keep people safe. That's our main focus, is keep people safe out there.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on the program tonight. But before you go, once again, what's coming up on Saturday, May 29th?
Yeah, May 29th from 9 to 2 at the Raritan Township Municipal Building Complex. Was it over on Route 12? 2 Municipal Drive in Flemington. And if you bring your boats over, whether they're on cars or you have trailers, power boats, open boats, canoes, jet skis, whatever, we'll inspect them for you. And inspection will take about 20 minutes. And we'll try and have a production line there. We have no idea what we're going to get this first time, so it's going to be fun for us, and we hope it's a success, and then impart a lot of information on boating safety, what people can expect when they go out on in a boat, and for their kids too. We're trying.
That's great. And once again, there is a website for the Coast Guard Auxiliary. What was that again?
It's cgaux.org. O-R-G.
All right. Well, so people can find more information. Jim, Ken, thank you so much for being part of the program tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break for a couple of announcements, and we'll be back with more Random Walk in just a moment.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
All right, we're back here on the Random Walk this evening. I'm very grateful to having the members of the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary in the studio tonight.
I found that very enlightening. A lot of stuff I didn't know. And there's actually stuff that they didn't actually get to. There's just so much, because I believe they have a band and a color guard, and they do funerals, and we didn't even
scratch
the surface on that.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And so I guess it's time for, as we're strolling through Hunterdon County, we might want to enjoy a beverage, and we might not always want to enjoy alcohol. For example, we might be out on our boat.
You might be out on your boat, piloting your boat. Is that what you call it?
Piloting. That's one
piloting
way to put
your
it.
Boat.
Yeah.
You don't want to drink alcohol. You could have a mocktail, so that's you could feel included, but without the alcohol.
That's right. And this one makes a lot of sense because you might be enjoying a beautiful sunset, and this is the Sunset Cooler.
All right.
So tonight's mocktail is the Sunset Cooler, and it starts out with 4 ounces of cranberry juice, 2.5 ounces of orange juice, a splash of lemon juice. I imagine that's more to taste, and enough ginger ale to fill your glass. You'll need some ice cubes, and you might want to garnish that with some fresh fruit. So you're going to want to blend the juices with some ice, which they don't tell you how many cubes, but I would say maybe 2 or 3 cubes would be good in a single serving. And they don't tell you exactly, but I'm guessing it's a Collins glass. So definitely, I would say 2 or 3 ice cubes or, you know, a little bit of crushed ice. I mean, maybe a quarter cup. You don't need a lot in something like this. So blend the juices with ice and pour into a Collins glass. Then top it up with some ginger ale and garnish with a flag of fresh fruit. And I would think just about any type of fresh fruit would be nice. An orange wheel perhaps, maybe a lemon wedge, maybe a nice piece of pineapple. So again, the Sunset Cooler, 4 ounces of cranberry juice, 2.5 ounces of orange juice, and a splash of lemon juice, and some ginger ale, and they have you blending it together, although I think you could probably also put this over crushed ice if you're not a blender person, because not everybody gets into the blender drink. and you can just put that in a nice Collins glass, and it looks very enjoyable. Sunset cooler. So you actually have a nice calendar section for us, Rosalind.
I do. Just to briefly go over our calendar section, as the Laura Altman and Michael Newman were here last week to talk about the Raritan River Music Festival. It continues this weekend with a performance by harpsist Bridget Kibbe. For COVID safety reasons, the entire festival will be in one venue this year, the Blue Army Shrine, located on Mountain View Road East in Asbury, New Jersey. All concerts will take place live in person and can also be viewed in real-time live stream beginning at 4 p.m. on the remaining Saturdays in May. Tickets must be purchased in advance to assure social distancing, but tickets can be exchanged anytime before the concert for a link to the live stream of the concert. To purchase tickets, you can go to RaritanRiverMusic.org or call 908-213-1100. So again, 908-213-1100. Hunterdon Land Trust Farmers Market kicks off a new season on May 16th with about 25 local farmers and vendors offering an array of organic produce, all natural beef, chicken and pork, fresh baked breads, cave ripened cheeses, honeys, pies, native plants, fresh cut flowers, locally roasted coffee, milk, and more. The market will open and will be open every Sunday from now through November 21st from 9 to 1 at DeVore Farm at 111 Mine Street. The Hunterdon Land Trust safety protocols due to COVID-19 are evolving, and shoppers should check HunterdonLandTrust.org for the latest information. Seniors and our more vulnerable population are encouraged to visit the market between 9 and 9:30 a.m. Hunterdon Land Trust plans to welcome the return of music, yoga, and programming during the market season. Fred Miller's Lectures and Song Series continues with Judy Garland on Wednesday, May 19th at 2 p.m. Judy Garland was a Hollywood's greatest female musical star, a doe-eyed girl with a genius for singing. For 15 years, she was MGM's leading lady. Later, she proved herself to be arguably the world's most electrifying live concert performer. The recording of this live virtual concert will be available afterwards, funded by the Friends of Hunterdon County Library. Reservations and information are at hclibrary.us. And finally, the In Peddler's Village Comedy in the Village, held in the outdoor event tent on Red Barn Field on May 28th. The check-in is at 7 p.m. and the show starts at 8. The show will be hosted by Dwayne Dunleavy, a multifaceted Bucks County entertainer who has been bringing joy to audiences for over two decades. It will feature Ashley Guttermuth, a New Jersey-based stand-up with an irresistibly positive, high-energy style, focusing on her unusual relationships and life's observation, as well as eternal pessimist Hack Zammon and humorous Mike Burton. Tickets are $50 plus tax for a table seating of two, and you can go to peddlersvillage.com/event/comedy-052821. And that wraps it up for our calendar section.
Wow, so that wraps it up for us as well.
It does, and I think that pretty much gets us almost out on time.
I would say so. So we'll be back next week, we hope, at 5 p.m. with more Random Walk, and we will migrate throughout Hunterdon County and all the fun and experience all the fun and exciting things in it.
That's right. So I'm Roz Davis.
I'm Victoria Davis.
And we wish you a good week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce.
Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs. Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Several states along the East Coast, including Virginia, North and South Carolina, and Georgia, are experiencing gas shortages. Georgia Republican Governor Brian Kemp is suspending the state's gas tax until Saturday night to offset any jump in prices at the pump. This comes after the cyber attack against Colonial Pipeline.
It'll probably help level the price at the pump off for a little while. But my message to people is, look, everything that we are hearing, and we will let you know if this changes, but they are saying that this is going to be a short-lived problem.
The Biden administration says COVID-19 booster shots will be free to the public if they are needed. White House Chief Science Officer David Kessler telling lawmakers they have the funds to purchase the next round. However, he's saying it's still unclear whether the booster shots will be necessary to protect against future variants. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Is a new war with China coming? It's never been this bad, and even Henry Kissinger is warning Americans. Trade, freedom, technology, and war threats against Taiwan. China is a real threat. All this week on Newsmax TV, Grant Stinchfield looks at the real danger of the Red Dragon and why Americans must be alarmed. Stinchfield shows how Trump's policies with China worked and why Biden's are failing. So tune in tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern to see Stinchfield's series, The Dangerous Dragon. Stinchfield tells you the real truth on Newsmax, America's fourth highest-rated cable news network, on all major cable systems. If you don't get it, call your cable system, tell them you want it. Or get Newsmax free on your smart TV.